Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Episode 93. Baseball is officially back. Pitchers and catchers have reported to Bradenton. Spencer Horwitz is hurt, and we answer your mailbag questions. You're listening to the Bucko Banter Podcast, brought to you by the Just Baseball Media Network. Cue the music.
Rocking 101, shit, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plate, send in case after case. Run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snake.
Adam, baseball is back, man. I'm excited. We have a lot to talk about today, cause a lot has happened over the past couple days. Spring training just started with pitchers and catchers reporting today on February 12th. What's up, man?
A lot is happening. Yeah. Let's just take some time to realize we've recorded multiple times a day every day since like last Thursday. It's been crazy. We are on our podcast game, but we got stuff to talk about. We got stuff in the future to talk about. We just announced that Josh Palacios will be on the show and the episode will be available this week. That's been in the works for a while now. So I'm pumped for that interview. That's going to be crazy, but the sound of the bat and the glove down there in Bradenton's got me feeling all types of ways, man.
Yeah, man. It's like the best form of ASMR. I love hearing the pop of the mitt, the crack of the bat. You hear the sounds of the sprinklers out in the field. I don't know. Just something about it really gets me going. I'm excited to get down there.
Because it's freezing cold here, dude. It is brutal. It was cold rain outside, and I just saw the videos from Bradenton. You see Skeens and Chandler throwing. I saw some Mike Burrows videos. I saw Anthony Solometto rocking the porn stash down there. So, like, yeah. We're all the way back.
We saw MTV Cribs version of Noah and Destin's house.
go check that out if you haven't already. PG Pirates. We made our debut last night on the Post-Gazette. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think we did well, man.
For a couple of nitwit bloggers, yeah, I think we did well too. So,
for sure. We were just going to do a mailbag episode this week, and then some things happened. Let's start off with the most notable out of maybe the three or four things that we have to talk about. Spencer Horwitz just had wrist surgery, and he's going to be out, per sources, 6 to 8 weeks. That's what the Pirates are telling Noah Hyles, Andrew Destin, Alex Stumpf. We have reason to believe that that's probably on the shorter end of things, right, Scott? I mean, like a wrist injury, hand injury with baseball guys, hitters, like that's a tough one to come back from, at least like that quick.
6 to 8 weeks just to resume baseball activity. So like he's not going to be on the, you know, opening day roster. And historically with hands and wrists, especially like when you see catchers or even just position players break that hammock bone in their hand.
Yeah.
It almost like it takes a while to ramp up and get back into the swing of things at the plate. So it's concerning. And I think my biggest concern is the fact that we knew about these chronic wrist issues and we still gave up the package that we did. Clearly the 17 minutes that he was a Cleveland Guardian, we did not really look through the medicals that much, or we just made the trade because we were desperate for a first baseman with years of control.
I would have just lied in that situation this morning at that emergency press conference.
Yeah, I would not have said anything. Well, you have to, but I guess.
You got to toe a fine line here, though, because you said you knew at the time of the trade, which means a bunch of things. Either, like you said, you did not do a full examination of the medicals. You didn't go through the proper physical. you just rolled the dice, or you gave up way too much of a package knowing that he had a chronic issue, right? Yeah. A lot of teams just shut these things down if somebody fails a physical or they have some type of injury issue that's lingering. They just won't go through with the trade, but not the Pirates. And they knew about it. And with chronic issues comes chronic problems, right? Like you see Key Brian Hayes, it's never ending. And we'll get into that a little bit because he looks like he's healthy. He looks like he's slimmed down. It's that time of the year where we're like, he's in the best shape of his life. He's got a smile on his face. Things are looking up. But with Spencer Horwitz, that was my guy to watch in spring training. I said it last night. And then 20 minutes later, he's hurt. So am I to blame for it? Is Jim Rosati to blame for it? Yes. I don't know. Okay. Well,
I was about to make a graphic today that said like a wanted graphic and put his picture on it. You know, Jimothy Rosati, if you have any news about him, please let us know. But I
think I got away a little bit busy there because he said it like 50 minutes before me. But that's a great answer because, listen, that was your top acquisition this offseason. That was a lot of people's pick to click. Not that he's not going to contribute this year. We really hope he does, but it throws a wrench into the plans, right? Because not only do we hear about Spencer Horwitz today, and I will note the language from Ben Cherington was we hope he contributes in 2025, or we think he's going to contribute in 2025. It was something along those lines where it's like, no, like, is he or is he not?
Yeah.
Is this going to be something that's going to, we're going to have to shut him down later on because it's lingering and it just doesn't get better? Or if we're looking at this in a positive way, is this something that was potentially just slowing that bat speed down and this is going to correct the chronic issue? He's going to feel healthy. This is going to prevent further problems down the road and he's going to be good to go for all the years of control that they have him. Then sure, fine. But either way, just not a great way to start spring training.
Yeah, not at all. It's kind of, I just laughed when I read it because it was like right when we got off with Noah and Destin last night. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. There's no, just when pitchers and catchers about to report tomorrow, you just can't be serious right now. But, you know, that's the life of a Pirates fan. And everyone's out there saying, sign Anthony Rizzo, sign Mark Canna, sign whoever. Guys, I think we have internal options to hold us by in the meantime. No, they're not everyday first baseman. I think we can get creative here and we'll get into that later.
Well, those options that you just mentioned are not good options. Like I agree, for once in my life, I'm saying do not go give even $1 million.
Oh, you mean the external options?
Yeah. Don't give Anthony Rizzo or whoever $1 million to come play a couple months and do what we already know that they're going to do.
It's going to turn out like Todd Frazier. It's just not going to work.
That don't remind me of that experience. Listen, I agree. I think Billy Cook, Jared Triolo, this is their time to shine. We thought Brian Reynolds could potentially get a move there. Noah tweeted literally earlier today that Derek Shelton said at the winter meetings that he was going to get some time at first base. And then at 5 o'clock, Jason Mackey put out a post saying from Ben Cherington that Endy and Reynolds will not get time at first base. So Endy, like we're going to ramp him up and I know they view him as a catcher, but he also is a first baseman. Like
that's honestly good for him during ramp up to play first base rather than be behind the plate.
Right. He's a young guy. Like you don't want him back there every day. And listen, if he could become the hitter that we expect him to be as one's a top prospect in this system, like you're going to want to fit him in the lineup every day anyway. So if he's not going to be behind the plate, then you could stick him at first base. And then you can leave another hole for the DH, whether that's Andrew McCutchen or somebody else that steps up, right? It's a lot of like, are we on the same page going into this very important spring training, or is just shit everywhere and we're just trying to put on this facade that everything's going to be okay? And I think it's the former.
Yeah, man. I don't want to be too forward, but I'm just going to say real quick, I've lost like, I mean, I didn't have much trust in Ben, but I think I've lost it all at this point because it just doesn't, I'm not confident in the guys making the decisions right now. Because one, the offseason was extremely underwhelming. And two, just the decisions like starting Henry in the outfield when he debuted and what how they're like ramping guys up, like David Bednar last year. And it just seems to be all over the place and there doesn't seem to be a plan. And it's frustrating, man. This is year six. So that's all I'll say about that. But
Yeah.
What else?
I was going to say, they do have Daniel Vogelbach back in the system. So, I mean, there is an internal option there. My guy's looking to come out of retirement.
Yeah, Danny Burgers. Danny Burgers. He's back. Assistant.
Yeah. Special assistant.
Yeah, to hitting. He'll probably be more of a rover. I don't think he's going to be with the big league club, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like more of a rover role.
Yeah, he's got the George Costanza role here. He's a special assistant to the traveling secretary. Like, I don't even know what this role really is or how much he's going to contribute, if he's going to be down on the complex or moving around.
Well, typically these organizations have these guys that are former players. Like when I was at the Blue Jays, we had Alomar, Delgado, Tim Raines, like some big names that would just go to each affiliate and spend like a week there. It was awesome.
You shouldn't have mentioned those names because then
Daniel we have Dan- No, I know that's our comparison. But whatever. I mean, like with the Mets, we had like Mookie Wilson stop in, guys like that. And these guys, like, this is like a retirement gig for these guys, not Daniel Vogelbach. It's like he's probably actually going to try to become a hitting coach or something. But I would guess he's going to be roving around to the different affiliates.
All right. I'm indifferent about it, honestly. And I think it's just kind of funny that we lost our first baseman and then Daniel Vogelbach gets announced pretty much the same day. So funny, such is life as a Pirates fan. And then the last news before our mailbag, Scotty, Tommy Pham is not a right fielder. He will be roaming left field at PNC Park as a 37-year-old.
With a bad arm.
With average to below average arm. His speed is not what it used to be. As we know, PNC Park, left field is pretty much center field. It's a lot more room to cover. Maybe O'Neill Cruz cuts a little bit more of that off. I will say, just from an analytical standpoint, Tommy Pham did have a positive outs above average in Kansas City when he did play left field last year. Okay. Reynolds had a -3 outs above average in right field compared to a -9 in left field. So maybe this is just kind of shifting liabilities around to get the most out of it. So not terribly upset about it because, again, Reynolds already wasn't performing out there. And yeah, maybe this is like we're moving him closer to first base technically. Like he's out in right field, but there's a little bit more room.
Cut him, ease him there, man. Come on.
Yeah, right. Just get closer and closer. But that was surprising. What do you think about that?
I don't hate Reynolds in right field. But, you know, I think we still have our corners are a problem, right? Like we improved left field, but by how much? Like Pham is a slightly less below average left right. fielder than Brian Reynolds. So like, I think it's still a problem. And, you know, I think it's a band-aid for a long, you know, a bigger, even bigger problem going down the road, especially for 162.
And then what happens with Sawinski, Palacios, York, question. Billy Cook? Like, are they now going to be platoon options in left field?
Yeah.
Where, like, I guess, right?
What 100%? I would think so. I think you'll see Palacios in left field. We saw him there a little bit the last 2 years. So I don't know about Sawinski, maybe, but then again, we still don't really have that plus defender out there, and that's what scares me. That's why I think Billy Cook's going to get a lot of time roving in the late innings.
Yeah,
the bench. If he makes his team right now, because if you look at the projected roster resource lineup, the active roster, I mean, Cook and York are not on that. We'll get into that in a little bit, but yeah.
Sure. Interesting. We'll see how it plays out. They just reported today, so there's going to be a lot of news that's going to be coming your way. Yep. Scott, let's get into mailbag questions. We have a ton of them, man. If we don't get to your question this time, we'll make sure that we submit it next episode. But there was a lot of good ones, a lot of funny ones, a lot of just existential crisis coming through our DMs, but we're going to try and hit on all of them. Let's get some of the quick ones out of the way first from Dan Lee Cardart on Instagram. Do you think the Pirates will increase the price of the ballpark pass? What do you think, Scott?
I think it's probably inevitable, but by how much? Like, is it going to be $50 a month? If they go much above that, I think everyone, it would be insulting. But it's inevitable that it's going to go up at some rate, I think. I don't know.
It's what $39.99 right now?
Yeah.
At what point do you stop paying for it? I don't know, 45? Like, I don't know. At that point, like, I'd rather just go back to our season tickets.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it's not by a lot, but we'll see, man. I think it's probably inevitable. I hope it's just like a minor increase, though.
Maybe it helps sign some more free agents.
Yeah, apparently, according to DK, the big move is still yet to happen. So right. I don't know if you saw that article. So
yeah, I saw it. I didn't read it. I read the headline. I got the gist of it. Yes, underscore it's underscore Hess on Insta. When will the misery end? I don't know. We're living in a nightmare.
No, I mean, my answer is never. Next question.
When is Mark Madden coming on Bucko Banter? I will sooner walk into traffic.
Yeah. I think it would be insulting for a couple of nitwit bloggers to ask him to come on their podcast. So I don't think he will be coming on. And he doesn't like baseball anyway. He's more of a hockey guy. Listen, hey, any interaction is good interaction. Not that he like addressed us directly, but he talked about the Post Gazette bringing on like NS9, us, Platinum Key. It's whatever. I don't really care. I thought it was funny. He does this to everybody.
Yeah. It's all right. I'm going to stop myself
right
there.
Yeah. I'll just move on. It's not even worth our time, man.
All right. That was with the funny questions. We appreciate those as always. So keep sending them our way. Let's get into the meat of this, Scotty, from Nolan underscore Griner 29 on Instagram. Do you think Adam Frazier will play 100 plus games and hit over 270? I'll throw this to you first.
I would say my answer is if this team is competitive at all this year, especially halfway through the season, I don't think he's on the roster long enough to get to 100 games. At least I would hope he wouldn't be. So I'd also be betting all my money against him batting even close to 270. I mean, this guy had negative WAR last year over 105 games and hit like 202. Like I just don't see like a big bump or a big enough bump this year to get him to this range. So I hope it's not 100 games. I would bet against it because I want this team to be competitive. But if they're not, he might get more. Who knows?
If this was Nick York, I'd be a little bit more optimistic about these numbers. I think 270 still might be a little bit high. Listen, Adam Frazier played 104 games with the Royals last year and hit 202 with a negative 0.6 F4.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's a lefty bat in the infield. I know it's been mentioned that the Pirates wanted a lefty bat. Not really a good platoon option. He hit 206 versus righties.
Where does he play?
Second base and third base. Right? He could play third base and he could play
in a pinch. I'd much rather outfield,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
The move made no sense.
Yeah.
He's not playing first base either. I understand the question because everybody's trying to get kind of a grip on where he fits with this team. And you mentioned it last episode. We have a bunch of puzzle pieces that just don't quite fit together in this overall bigger 1,000-piece puzzle that they're trying to put together. It's he's kind of a loose piece that we're maybe is a little bit bent and we can't fit it into the right spot. So if I were to give just yes or no, I don't think he makes it to 100 games this year. I think he's been trending in the wrong direction, and 270 is a drastic difference from what he's put up over the past couple of years. So good question, Nolan. Let's go to the next one from Earhart97 on Instagram. How do you think the Pirates bullpen will look in 2025? I'll kick us off here. I think it's all dependent on David Bednar.
Yeah.
I think this all relies on him being healthy and getting back to form when he was an all-star. With no Bednar, it's a whole different picture, right? Because you need a lot more production out of Kyle Nicholas. You need a lot more production out of Carmen Majinski in higher leverage situations, not to mention Colin Holderman as well. But if Bednar is healthy, then I really like the shape of this bullpen going into this year. And then I kind of see it as a strong suit right now.
100%.
I do. You have Dari Moretta coming back with people forget how nasty he was, like absolutely gross. That slider, it's like a reverse slider. I don't know if you consider it like a split almost, but it like comes in on the hands of righties. And then if you have success out of guys like Caleb Ferguson and Tim Mesa, where you're able to get ground balls in key situations, this is a good bullpen. But if David Bednar is not there, then you start to question where things lie.
Yes and no. I kind of agree with you. I actually think this bullpen is deeper than it was last year. I think we have more options. I obviously want Bednar to get back to form. I think that's important, but I think there are other guys with late inning upside in this bullpen. So Yeah, I mean, I think David Bednar makes his bullpen complete. But if I had to tell you right now how I think it's going to shape up by opening day, I'd say Bednar at closer, your two setup men in your eighth and seventh inning are Holderman and Nicholas. And then I'd go your middle relievers are Santana, Majinski, Ferguson. Is Moretta going to be ready for opening day?
Maybe not. They probably. Maybe.
Okay, so let's say Moretta's not ready. Then I think your last two spots go to either one or two of these lefties, Meza, Wentz, or Baruchy.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I could also see, depending on how the rotation shakes out, I could see Oviedo in an Ortiz role. I could also, if he comes in and kills it, I could see Ashcraft or Burrows make it into the bullpen to get onto this roster. I could also see Peter Strzelecki and Tanner Rainey. This is a guy that Jason Mackey brought up last night on the Post-Gazette as a non-roster invitee that has a lot of experience and could crack this roster. And then in AAA, you have some options. Like, they just traded for Chase Shugart, Brett DeGus, as Noah calls him, Johan Ramirez, who was here before, Yeri Rodriguez, Eddie Yean, Ryder Ryan, Isaac Mattson, Stratton, and Yeri Rodriguez. So I think there's a lot of options, but I would bet on there being two of those four lefties in the bullpen, if not three, depending on how they perform. I feel like Joey Wentz is the odd man out.
Yeah, I agree with that. My only pushback on that, I agree that they definitely do have a lot of options, but you do have to consider that a lot of these guys get hurt and then there's going to be a rotating door. But if David Bednar is the same David Bednar he was in 24, then who are you? Are you going closer by committee in that situation? Or are you slotting one of those leverage guys like Nicholas and Majinski into that role right away?
I think you could. I think a lot of teams do it, the closer by committee. I don't think like you need to have one guy pitch the ninth. I think it's actually valuable to have multiple guys be able to throw, that high leverage inning based on how they've been used over the past week or so. So I think that's a good problem to have. You know, we'll see how it plays out. Ferguson could be in that long man role. They teased him potentially starting. I don't see that happening, but could he be the long man? I mean, Wojcicki's opened some games, pitched multiple innings. We have a little bit of versatility in this bullpen, which I think is valuable compared to last year.
Yeah, I agree. Good stuff. Let's go to our next one on Instagram. I think this is the last Instagram question we got. JM Stamp on Instagram. What do you think Nick York's ceiling is? I love this question because we're high on Nick York. It's a great question.
Yeah.
It's kind of difficult to say at this point just because of the sample size. What do you think about this? I'm just saying in terms of like plate discipline, I see a lot of Ryan McMahon up there in terms of like bat to ball skills.
Yeah, plus plate discipline. Yeah.
Plus plate discipline. Say that 10 times flat. Jesus. But no, he's not chasing. He's going to get a lot of walks. He's going to go bat to ball. That BABIP's probably going to be pretty solid, where he's going to be entering BABIP King territory in our books up there with our Lord and Savior, Jared Triolo. But like high end utility, I think, is what we're talking here with strong plate discipline and able to take 20 bags a year. Whether or not that power is there, I think like at most you're probably getting 20 bombs, but I think it would be safer to say 10 to 15. And that's just like, is he an everyday player or not? I don't know.
I think he is. And I'm going to make the case real quick. I think his ceiling, to answer that specifically, is a slightly above average regular. I think he's gotten better through, like I've said multiple times, even last night in the Post-Gazette, the further away he gets from his surgery, he's become healthier, the arm's stronger. He's got a very quick and efficient bat path that he's able to make consistent, contact. The batted ball data is beautiful. His average exit velo sat north of 105 last year. That's two ticks above MLB league average. So I always bet on guys who make consistent, but not just consistent, hard contact. Like, he's making consistent contact, but it's often hard. He has a 46% hard hit rate last year. Like, that's a guy that could run into 20 home runs. I know his path might not be something that you project 20 home runs on, but these are the guys that tend to get there. All right. But even as a 280 to 300 plus hitter at his peak with 15 bombs, I think this is a very valuable player. Now, he also has above average speed, which should allow him to maintain, like you said, those high BABIPs, above average BABIPs. I think he's got a really high floor too. It's just a matter of where he plays. And that's something that I'm really excited to see this spring. I really don't want Adam Frazier to make this roster over Nick York. I think that would be ludicrous. I'm just curious of where they're going to focus him in the field. Is it going to be right? Is it going to be second? Is it going to be a little bit of everywhere? I don't know.
Well, this kind of plays into our next question on X from our friend Ian Labatch.
Yeah.
Does signing Tommy Pham stop Nick York from playing in the outfield? It shouldn't.
Yeah,
it shouldn't. It makes it a little bit more confusing to me that he's in left now, and where they see it going with Adam Frazier playing time compared to Nick York. Is this going to be a situation where they sign Adam Frazier and he doesn't make the roster? He's a roster invite to spring training and he doesn't make it. I think Destin brought that up last night. I don't know. I'd rather go with the young guy that has a higher ceiling than the guy that has been on a serious downfall in the last couple of years.
How about this wild idea? How about we just go with the better player?
Wow.
I know. I mean, this is a guy too that you traded a arm for, you dealt from depth, and this is a guy you needed upper level bats. Like, this is a guy that should get priority if he's earning his playing time. Like, if we go through spring and he vastly outperforms Adam Frazier and Tommy Pham, like this shouldn't even be a discussion. I don't care, $4 million, 1.15, whatever they gave Adam Frazier, it should even be a discussion.
This is one of my favorite X Twitter handle names right here. Jalapeno Hanner on X. Thanks for the question. What is your ideal opening day roster lineup, taking into account any free agents or trades that could happen?
Ooh,
this is
I got
tough.
Creative with this.
Yeah, let's hear yours. I had a hard time putting together like a 1 through 9 here.
Oh,
I want to hear what you got.
Alrighty. And this is not taking into account what Ben has said or whatever. This is my ideal opening lineup. Batting leadoff, we'll stick with DH, Andrew McCutchen. All right. He did well in that spot last year. Let's go back to him. Second, we got Brian Reynolds, but he's got to shift back to left field for now. Okay. Temporarily. He might mix in at first base a little bit, but you're going to find out why. Third, we're batting O'Neill Cruz. It's in center. Fourth, we acquire right fielder Hessen Kjerstad from the Orioles. Okay? Mitch Keller is going to the Orioles and probably another prospect or two. I also would like Jake McCarthy. If Jake McCarthy's in this lineup, he makes more sense in left field because he's a plus defender, and you can move him up in the lineup, I think, 2 and 3, probably shift down. Mm-hmm. 5, Joey Bart at catcher. 6, Nicky G at second base. 7, I've got Andy at first base. It makes too much sense. 8, Cabrian at third. And 9, we have Jose Iglesias at short. Plus defender at short. Also hit near 300 last year. IKF is dealt. I don't know for who. Bench, we got Henry Davis at catcher. So we're rostering 3 catchers. We've got Jared Triolo, Nick York, and Billy Cook coming off the bench. And then our rotation, I already talked about what the bullpen would look like, but real quickly, I'm going to go through the rotation. Paul Skeens, Jared Jones, Bubba Chandler, Bailey Falter, and Oviedo.
Man, you are one optimistic cat, dude.
Question is dream lineup. Like, I'm telling you what I would do.
Ideal.
Oh, ideal? Never mind. I did.
Ideal.
It's ideal to me. Right.
That's ideal to you. That's ideal.
I love Pino Hammer.
Yeah, I love. I mean, great question. Very difficult question given the layout of things right now. I have pretty much Kutch, Reynolds, Cruz at 3, Bart at 5, Gonzo at 6. I have Hayes at 8 or 9, but then the rest is kind of like plug in place for me right now, depending on where we go. I didn't even touch the rotation.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of that depends on like what they do with the bullpen and if there's another move coming. I don't know.
Good stuff. Let's go to our next one on X. JP, thank you for the question. Do you know anything about the new hitting coach? Will he let the guys actually swing the bat? I like Matt Haig. I like this hire. Whether he lets the – I think that's a very hard question because these are athletes. They're going to either choose to swing the bat or not. I think that's kind of more of a player issue.
Yeah.
And I think Andy Haynes got a lot of backlash for that.
Also a philosophical thing. For
sure.
Yeah,
sure. I would say yes, JP. I think he will let the guys swing the bat. And the reason I say that is Matt Haig is known to be more of like a player oriented guy. Ideally, he likes to have everybody have their own type of style, own approach. no one swing is the same. So he's going to deal with every guy a little bit differently. And that's what we've been calling for. And I think that's what's necessary when you have all this different type of talent and different types of swings, different mentalities, different approaches. You need a guy that's going to be able to adapt, understand the human being behind the swing, behind the guy that gets into the batter's box, and then build off of that. And that's pretty much the main report that's come out on Haig, right? Is he's a player's guy. They like working with him, and he understands where they're coming from as a former player. Whether or not, like, I don't know much about like his philosophy when it comes to breaking down a count and approach and how he views the mechanics of a swing, but I would think it's more like, hey, let's find a feel for these guys and work around what's already gotten to this level.
Yeah, listen, I'm giving Matt Haig every chance. I like him until he gives me a reason not to. Everything I have read, to answer this quickly, everything I have read suggests that, like you said, he's a player-oriented coach. He doesn't have this cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach to hitting. We saw this briefly with Ray Sears, his pitching coach. He had a good run, but when he wanted everyone to pitch down in the zone, he wanted everyone to induce weak ground balls. And there are guys like Tyler Glasnow and Garrett Cole that their stuff works better up in the zone, and it just didn't work for them. So I'm a big believer in coaching every player separately and individually, and it sounds like that's his philosophy. So I'm all in.
Absolutely. Let's, again, that's just something that you have to wait and see, right? Let's go to our last one, I believe, on X. Angelo Bononi, hope I said that right. Thank you for the question. Does the Jason Mackey article change your opinion at all regarding the Tommy Pham signing?
No.
No, it doesn't. I respect Jason Mackey. He does very good work. I think where Mackey is getting with this article is it's a Kickstarter, a guy that cares a lot, that brings high energy. Yeah. I don't disagree with that. It doesn't change my mind on the signing.
He's saying we need a guy in the clubhouse who's going to kick some ass and, you know, rile the guys up. And I get that. But, like, do I think that it makes the team better? No. And that's just my opinion. So,
okay. From our email, we got a lot of emails this time, too. And then we have YouTube as well from James Cartwright. Bear with me here, Scotty. What is the underlying logic of roster construction, i.e. the logjam of serviceable bats at the catcher position? Bart and Rodriguez seem like they should be everyday bats on this team and delay a competent backup. The Davis piece of the puzzle makes it even more curious. What's Endy's role going to be on this team, especially with an incoming everyday first baseman in Horwitz, which this question, it was submitted a couple of days ago. Is this mismanagement, or do you see possible justifications where the situation works out?
Yeah, let me jump in here real quick. Thanks for the question, James. But it's I got, you know, one team to reference here, the Tampa Bay Rays. This is not a mismanagement, or this is not a problem. This is actually a good problem to have, I think. Having a logjam of serviceable bats at any position is good until you have to get rid of one of them, right? It gives you depth, and it also gives you, if they're all healthy, gives you, an asset to move for areas that you're weak in. Like, we see the Rays do this every year. They have this logjam on the 40 man. They just got to keep flipping guys through. And this is how they're able to stay consistently good. Now, you have to have trust in your decision makers to make the right decisions and develop these guys, ramp them up properly. And that just hasn't happened with us. So that's more of a problem than the logjam at any position.
I think the back end of this question is what is confusing now based on what we've learned today with Horwitz going to be out 6 to 8 weeks and then going to have to ramp up again. And then us learning Endy is not going to get time at first base, or at least that's how we're interpreting it in the meantime, which, again, like, we've criticized them putting Davis in right field to start his career and then saying he's a catcher. And they're probably doing the same thing with Endy right now, saying, like, hey, he's a catcher. Fine. But, like, if these guys hit, awesome. Like, good problem to have, like you said. I think we both agreed on this last night on the Post Gazette stream. It's going to be Bart Davis to start the season.
Yeah.
Possibly delay. Possibly.
I'd be with delay as a backup.
Yeah. I like delay. I think he's a good role player on a team. Guy that could lay down a bunt here and there, some old fashioned small ball. But realistically, I think they have so much invested in Henry Davis at this time. The former 1-1, they're not giving up on him yet. Obviously, there's a ton of power potential in the bat, which is something this team desperately needs. So, like, yeah, you're going to try and squeeze everything you can out of Henry Davis and make all the tweaks that you can to try and get this right to see if he could drive in runs. If not, then it's Bart and Endy. And then, you know, again, good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you there. Totally agree.
And on YouTube, Scott, we flew through these, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Much quicker than I thought.
At the C Kittle 2518, this is another good question. I've been thinking a lot about it. Is it too much weight? Is there too much weight put behind advanced metrics such as exit velocity and bat speed? I personally think average and K rate or K percentage are just undervalued in today's game. Home runs are valuable, but solo homers only help so much. I agree and disagree to a certain extent. This is a very good question.
Yes.
I don't value average as much as I used to. And I think average is a fun one because you could look at like a Luis Arraez type player and it's like, yeah, he hits a shit ton of singles, right?
That's literally his
only like, tool. Yeah, he's a one tool guy. And granted, that tool is Tony Gwynn level good at the plate, but how does a Luis Arraez help this Pirates team right now? He doesn't. I personally don't think he does, just because of what this team needs is to drive and runs. And it's like, yeah, you get a guy that gets a lot of hits, but he doesn't slug at all. And he might, which the second half of that K rate, I agree. I think that's super undervalued. Yeah. Guys that don't strike out a lot, guys that go up there and battle, very undervalued. I 100% agree. I just think the game has gone in the direction where hitting the long ball and slugging, I won't even want to say home runs, because I agree. I also agree. Like, yeah, solo home runs go only so far. And in order to get that, you need guys on base. But I'd much rather value guys that hit doubles consistently over guys that walk consistently. I think that's just where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I think, honestly, in a way, I've valued average a little bit more. Like, I've gone through this peak where I'm all about average OBP, and then I'm like more the advanced analytics, and now it's like coming back around. But I think it's a healthy balance. Like, average is not the only thing I look at, right? I think you can look at a healthy balance of analytics. And, you know, one thing that I've always been big on when evaluating hitters is I want to see guys that put the bat on the ball a lot, okay? Yeah. And I want to see guys that put the bat on the ball at a high bat speed and generate hard hits at a consistent rate. Like, I know that sounds really simple, but I'm just trying to dumb it down. So I think looking at exit velo is like big for me. You know, I think bat speed, exit velo, I think those are not everything. Important statistics to look at. I'm big. You know, I've gone on rants about Jack Suwinski's K rate and other guys that just K too much. Like, you're just like not helping the team if you are going up and not putting the bat on the ball. Like, your bat needs to work in multiple parts of the zone. I think it's also healthy to have a good balance of different types of hitters in your lineup. But just to wrap this up, like, I don't solo home runs versus 3-run home runs. That's more circumstantial. Like, that's not anything that a player can control. That's more of like a lineup problem from top to bottom. If you need guys to get on base, that's why
I like slugging.
Yeah. You need guys to be in scoring position. So I think I'm going on a rant here, cause I could talk about this for hours, but I think just looking at a healthy balance and seeing and knowing what you value. So for me, I value guys that make consistent hard contact too. I think those are the guys, that's why I'm gravitating towards Nick York right now. That's what I look at. I look at a healthy mix of exit velo, contact rate, K rate, you know, bat speed, all that stuff.
OPS.
OPS is my favorite. Yes. Yeah. OPS is my favorite for sure.
On base plus slugging. That's, yeah, that's what I look at. That's why I don't value average as much, because sure, if the OPS is good, I think you're much more valuable to a team. I think I agree. I look at exit velocity as like the highest advanced metric, but more in like, a more fine-tuned way, where like at this time of the year, I think it's very important if we're hitting the ball very hard, right? Because mm-hmm. It shows that we're We're making good swing decisions. We're barreling. We're getting the sweet spot of the bat, and that's translating to hitting the ball hard, which guess what? The harder it's hit, the harder it is to field in most cases. And then from there, if you're hitting the ball hard, there's usually just more of a slighter tweak, whether that's getting behind the ball a little bit more, correcting the bat path through the zone, and that goes a long way. So I think we get a little bit confused with advanced metrics, and there's so much thrown at us with FanGraphs and Baseball Savant, while all very helpful and necessary in their own ways. I don't think it's everything. Obviously, these guys are human beings. They have feel for it. But when we're talking like what we value or like what, how much weight we put on it, I, out of all that, OPS, I like exit velocities. It's not top of the chain for me, but I think it is telling based on the guy in the swing.
I want to tell a quick story just because we're only at 41 minutes here. So when I started scouting in 2016, I there's two ends of the spectrum first. Let me start there. Like, you have your Luis Arraez, who makes a lot of contact, not necessarily hard contact, but makes consistent hard contact. And there's the opposite end of the spectrum where guys have these unbelievable, power swings that they can park a ball 500 feet on the regular, but they might swing and miss a lot because they're battling worse than one part of the zone. And the one person I want to bring up is the most impressive batting practice that I have watched while scouting at the lower levels. Estevan Florial, you know that name?
Yeah.
Okay. This guy was an absolute freak. I was sitting next to a Brave scout in the Appy League in Bluefield. He's like, dude, you got to watch this. And I'm telling you, he was consistently putting balls over the scoreboard in right field. Like, it was just the most insane thing I've ever seen. Get into a game situation, I mean, this guy was swinging and missing a lot and swinging at everything against rookie league pitching. So I was like, if he ever figures out you can't teach this power. Like, if he ever figures out the bat, the ball, like, this guy is going to be, and he was a plus runner too. This guy is going to be a star at the big league level. The K rate was always something that's hampered him. I don't even know if he's still in the league right now, but
yeah, he had some time with the Guardians last year.
Yeah. I mean, some of the most
insane
power I've ever seen in person at that level.
Yeah. It's like his sweet spot rate in 2020 was 100. Hard hit, 64th percentile. It's just, yeah, he's going to whiff a ton.
If you're not going to make enough contact, it doesn't really matter how far you hit the ball. So yeah, it's a healthy mix.
Baseball's back, Scott.
I'm so excited, man. I'm so excited.
It's back, and I'm hoping we have some more positive news, because today was a little weird, right? Because it's like, yeah, baseball's back. You're getting the videos from Noah and Destin and stuff, like I mentioned, of Skeens and Chandler and Jones and Solometto, and you got all these, like, the sounds of baseball. You got that warm, fuzzy feeling, and I'm not talking about the warm weather in Bradenton, which again, I'm very much looking forward to, but there's that sense of hope again, right? Like, a little bit, even though you're getting hit with the Horowitz injury, you're getting hit with the Tommy Pham news of moving around. You don't know who's going to plug in where. We got 7 second basemen. Like, what's the deal? Baseball's back. It doesn't matter. I know we're both glancing at our phone right now.
I can't say anything, but yeah. I'm sorry if I look distracted.
I saw it too. I saw it.
I'm like, what? What is this?
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe that'll be news for next episode.
It's not big news.
Big news. Oh, geez. All right.
We just got some news leaked to us, but anyways.
It's the exact opposite.
Alrighty. Well, that's
on that note. Yeah. On that note.
Listen, it's not too late to go to the Bucko Banner store, get your loved ones some gear for Valentine's Day. It may come a little bit late, but when they see the Bucko Banner gear, they're going to be like, oh my God, thank you so much. I got my girl some Bucko Banner gear. I know you told your girlfriend that you're going to get her some Bucko Banner gear. So, you know, it's a gift that keeps on giving.
It's like what's the commercial? He went to Jared.
Yeah. He went to Bucko Banner.
Yeah. He went to Bucko. It's so romantic. Go over to buckobanter.com. We always appreciate the support. We love seeing the gear out there and all the support. I ordered some new gear not off our website, but just to wear on the ballpark this year, Scott. And I'm not going to say it right now. Once I get it, I'll show it on the pod. I'll show it off. I'll give a shout out to the company. But I'm really excited to just keep moving this thing forward. And a good way to keep moving that forward and to keep supporting us, go over to YouTube right now. Right now. Drop what you're doing. If you're watching this at work, if you're listening at work, awesome. We love our listeners. Leave a 5-star review, comment, download the episode, but put down everything. Hang up on your mom. Hang up on your dad. Your siblings don't need attention anymore. Go over to YouTube. Hit subscribe. Like, leave a comment, share it. If you don't like it, don't share it with anybody. Yeah. You never heard this episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I second that.
All social media at Bucko Banter, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok. And hey, go follow the Sacks Cast too.
Yeah.
While you're at it. If you're trying to learn more about Mongolia, Scott and I are getting pretty big in Mongolia, not to brag or anything. But we're pretty.
I look at my phone and I get like 100 some likes and follows from Mongolian people. I'm like, what is going on? But it's cool. It's interesting, man.
I love it. I love it. Shout out Sax Boy. Spring training is upon us, Scott. We're going to be down there in just a matter of time. It's almost a month today. Well, I guess when this releases, it will be a month until spring training. Mm-hmm. So can't wait, man. I am so excited. And tune in. Friday, Josh Palacios coming on the podcast.
Big. I'm really excited for that episode. I'm sure it's going to be a good one. So make sure you tune in to start your Valentine's Day. I can't think of a better way to start it, honestly.
Yeah. Stay hot, Bucko Banter. Until then, raise it.
Raise it.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and then case after case. Run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snakes.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assisted customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.